Next up on Coast to Coast, we are going to talk about magic, the occult, conversations with angels, and so much more with Jason Louv. His latest work, John Dee and the Empire of Angels. We'll tell you all about that when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, get ready for a little magic and the occult. Jason Louv, a journalist, has covered surveillance, international trade, and the dark side of technology for a number of organizations, including Vice News, Boing Boing, Motherboard, and many, many more. Author of 7 books, has been a futurist, strategist. He's worked on Buzz Aldrin's international campaign to colonize Mars and Google's Artists and Machine Intelligence System. He also has spent more than 20 years engaged in firsthand intensive research into the world's esoteric spiritual traditions. He has empowered thousands of people through his online school, Magic, magick.me. And here he is on Coast to Coast. First-time guest, Jason. Welcome to the show.
Hey, George, I'm so honored to be on. Thank you for having me on.
I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be fun. And a great book, by the way. I mean, it's very thorough.
Oh, thank you. So the new book is called John Dee and the Empire of Angels. And it's, as I'm sure you've seen, almost 600 pages long. It's a hardback. And it's a biography of John Dee, who was Queen Elizabeth I's court astrologer and scientific advisor and magician. And that's important because he is really the key figure of the entire Western occult tradition. He's kind of the guy that started the modern occult and is really its most important thinker. But what the book is really about is the history of how the occult has influenced and in many ways shaped the Western world for the last 500 years. And so this is a book that explains how the occult has been the hidden secret force that has really shaped not just religion, but politics and geopolitics, and is responsible for the British Empire and the American Empire, and even all the way up to the modern day with the U.S. space program. And that has been a hidden history for a long, long time, so I've really sought to peel back the veil and open the doors and show the world what's been going on.
A couple of our guests, Mitch Horowitz and Lon Milo Duquette, highly recommend your work.
Yeah, those are both amazing, amazing guys. Lon is an amazing author and has been writing about John Dee and Enochian for a long, long time. And Mitch also, who I saw was just on your show, is a great, great occult writer.
Good person.
And they both provided very generous quotes for the book.
Who was John Dee?
So John Dee was the scientific advisor to Queen Elizabeth I. And he was a mathematical prodigy. We're talking about the 16th century. So you have to imagine kind of England before it became an empire. So England was still very poor, mm-hmm. and people were eating kind of sawdust and congealed blood. They had nothing to eat. And it was a terribly poor country. It was during the right after the Protestant Reformation. So there was basically an open war between Catholics and Protestants. And so this was London and England at a time when people were still being burnt at the stake, and Protestant heretics, as they were known at the time, were being burnt at the stake, and the air was kind of filling with the stench of burning bodies, and it was a very grim and miserable time. And John Dee was a guy who was an early proto-scientist and somebody who was interested in laying the groundwork for what would become science and bringing Europe out of the Dark Ages. And he wanted not only to open scientific knowledge to everyone, but also what you might call a scientific knowledge of the spirit world. He wanted to pursue techniques of exploring the other realms of existence. And in his case, this meant figuring out ways to talk to angels directly. And he wanted to do that because he wanted these angels to help England become a world empire, a British empire, which was a phrase that he coined. He came up with the phrase British Empire. And he wanted a worldwide empire of angels and he wanted basically to bring spiritual enlightenment to the entire planet. And yes, he was a direct advisor to Elizabeth, and is kind of the guy who's responsible for some tremendous feats. He not only came up with the phrase of the British Empire, but he provided all the naval schematics and navigational plans necessary to turn England into an empire. He was the first person to bring knowledge of higher mathematics to England. He really laid the groundwork for modern science by creating an intellectual climate and fostering science in England at a time when there was none of that. And he had the largest library in England at the time, five times the size of Oxford and Cambridge. And also, if he had just stopped there, he would have been remembered as one of the great leading lights of the early days of science, somebody like Kepler or Galileo, perhaps. But he didn't stop there. In his 50s, he spent, as I've hinted at, he spent 10 years with a psychic named Edward Kelly, engaged in daily efforts to make contact with the other side and talk to angels.
It's amazing during this time period, the late 1500s, early 1600s, that they would even think about things like this.
It is. Although the crazy thing about Dee is that it wasn't just that he was interested in magic and the occult, because, you know, kind of everyone was interested in magic and the occult at the time, but they were interested in it behind closed doors. They didn't like to talk about it. And even the British elite, during this time, and also, you know, throughout history, has been engaged in investigating the occult, but they didn't want to let on to that in public. So the thing that's so remarkable about Dee is that he took great personal and professional risks to openly engage in it, and also that he pursued it with such scientific rigor and honesty, you know, intellectual honesty, which nobody has really did before or has quite done to the same level since. And the example that I always give somebody is, like, if John Dee lived in the modern day, you have to imagine somebody like Stephen Hawking, right, who is at the top of his game, is recognized in the whole world as a scientific genius and is well respected and has the ear of anyone he wants. And then at the age of 50 saying, you know what, I've kind of learned everything I can from physics. I'm just going to spend the next 10 years, you know, trying to make psychic contact with aliens, if that's okay with everybody. That's kind of what the deal with John Dee was.
Well, you've done a great job here, and we'll get into some of these other players in just a second. In your opinion, what is magic? Some people think it's dabbling with the dark side. Other people say, no, it's not. Where do you stand?
Well, I'll give you my personal definition of magic, which is, you know, my poetic and kind of grandiose description of magic is that, you know, a stage magician, somebody who's producing illusions as a show and pulling rabbits out of hats, a stage magician is in the business of producing illusions to entertain people. A real magician, somebody who truly engages in the real occult, is somebody who is in charge of taking illusions away and stripping the illusions of what most people think reality is away, both from pulling the wool from their own eyes and trying to wake up and enlighten other people. But a more down-to-earth description would be, I use the phrase magic as kind of a shorthand to describe all of the esoteric practices that humanity has been engaged in since the dawn of history to the modern day, going back to Paleolithic shamanism, or if we look at any of the, you know, the techniques of religions throughout history of yogis or Sufi dervishes, mm-hmm. or, you know, any, you know, these esoteric traditions or esoteric Buddhism, heavy meditators, or really anyone who is engaged in any spiritual technique for heavily altering consciousness. Even all the way up to the modern day with things like neurolinguistic programming and more modern forms of quote-unquote magic. But that's kind of a lot to talk about. So I use the word magic as a shorthand because it sounds really cool, because, you know, it is cool. It's a fascinating area of research.
There seems, Jason, to be a huge, huge interest in magic these days. Where's that coming from?
There absolutely is. And so I spent the last 20 years of my life kind of immersing myself in magic and the occult and esoteric spirituality.
That's a long commitment.
I could get my hands on.
That's a long commitment, 20 years like that.
Well, it's a life path, you know.
I mean, yeah.
But it's that it's been that interesting for me. It's held, you know, it's held my interest for that long. And so, but when I first started, and I kind of have engaged in this in like a gonzo journalist type way, where I've gone in and immersed myself in things like, you know, I trained as a shaman in the mountains in Nepal, or studied yoga up in the Himalayas, or joined Sufi groups, you know, or you know, all kinds of esoteric and occult practices. And I've just gone through them in a very deep and sincere way in my life because they fascinate me so much. But when I first started doing this, nobody was interested in it. I could count the people into it on one hand. And so I've kind of spent the last 20 years really pushing it and opening the information out into the public. And a lot of people have been doing that. And so to answer your question, I really think that it's because of the internet. The internet has opened up access to all of this stuff that was totally hidden. And of course, shows like Coast to Coast have played a big role in it. And I have to, of course, at this point, offer my great respect to Art Bell. You know, yes. How could I not?
Of course.
And people who were leading the way in the 90s and earlier, and now because of the internet and people who laid the seeds of this, because of the internet, everyone has access to, you know, when I first started researching this, you really had to hunt for the information. It was like looking for, you know, like a rare record from a band that nobody had heard of, right? Now it's like, you know, you can go on the internet and get PDFs of any book, you know, or academic information. You can have books sent to you by Amazon Prime the same day. So everyone has the information now. And at the same time, I truly believe that we live in an era where people have lost access to their own souls, to what it means to be alive. And they know they're missing out on something. And they know that something has been hidden from them. And even though they have that feeling, they're not getting the answers from the mainstream culture. You know, people aren't quite religious in the same way as they used to. Religion is not really a force in people's lives anymore. You know, we're just on social media and our phones all day long, and people don't even really talk to each other and socialize in the real world in the same way that they used to, which is quite tragic.
Well, I was at the Denver airport last week, Jason, just sitting there waiting for my plane, and everybody who's there sitting, they're all on their smartphones, all of them. I mean, you could just walk down the line and count them all. Everybody had one out. It was unbelievable. So you're right. I mean, it's taken over the world.
It has. And actually, this relates directly to John Dee. John Dee identified a demon that he called Karanzon, which is the personification of kind of fragmented attention. It's the personification of a mind that is unable to coalesce around one single point, and which is just scattered and like a thousand mad voices, and very much like the character Tom O'Bedlam from Shakespeare's King Lear, just all over the place and scattered and unable to, you know, form one coherent train of thought from one second to the next. And one of the things that I say in this book is this is, you know, really a description of our modern world, that it is in a sense possessed by this demon Karanzon, which kind of represents the human intellect without the guiding force of spirituality, or just the scattered human mind without being brought to something higher, a higher wisdom and understanding.
Why do you think there's this surge, though, in magic now? I mean, it just seems to have exploded.
Because people feel disempowered and they want to feel empowered. I think it's that simple. They know they're missing out on something, but they also, you know, we have a media climate now and, you know, in many ways, a political climate all over the world where everyone is afraid and anxious and, you know, they're not getting answers to anyone. So I don't think it's any surprise at all that people would want to investigate magic and the occult because they want to feel personally empowered. They want to feel like they're back in charge of their life and they want to feel like they're in touch with meaning. And I think these are the profound things that magic provides people in their lives. It gives them a sense of empowerment. It gives them a sense of meaning, and not meaning that somebody else has given them, like a religious dogma, but a meaning that they've constructed on their own. And the way that I kind of phrase it is, you know, if you go to the gym and you exercise, you have to work at building muscle for a long period of time. And if you stop, you kind of lose your gains. Magic is very much the same, where, you know, one of the, it's exercise for spirituality, it's exercise for the soul. And it's a set of practical techniques, from meditation to rituals for focusing on what you truly want in life, not what somebody else is telling you that you should do. But it's a set of daily practices that allows you to construct your life into exactly what you want it to be and not what somebody else wants it to be. And I think that that's, you know, personally, I just think, what could be better? That's the best set of tools that anyone could have. And I think that because people are becoming more aware of this, of course they want access to that, because the modern world doesn't offer them very much. It's so kind of inherently disempowering.
1942, there was a song that came out called That Old Black Magic. What is black magic?
So I think that the way that I define black magic is, you know, really it's magic that's not coming from a place of deeper wisdom and understanding. And I kind of define black magic as any use of magic to try to influence somebody else that's not you. When I say the word magic and the way that I use the phrase magic, I'm interested in people learning magic to do magic on themselves, to make themselves into the best possible version of themselves, to evolve, to become a better and more full and more mature and more adult human being, in the same way that you would do like a meditation practice or you know, like a Buddhist practice or something like that. It's really the same thing. But I would define black magic, at least, as when people kind of become obsessed with this idea that they can somehow use the occult to influence other people or get other people to do what they want. And I think that you actually can't do that. I think it's actually a misunderstanding that comes from people who don't really know a whole lot about magic. But unfortunately, there are people who do get into this who, you know, do approach the subject in that very kind of unenlightened way.
Yes.
And I try to very much, you know, one of the reasons I try to be so public is to show people that that's not the way to do it.
I mean, they try for curses and spells and not good ones either.
Right. And this is, I just look at this stuff as silly. It's very immature. And it comes from a place of, it also comes from a place of disempowerment. I think that if people focused on just deciding what they wanted in life and going for it, instead of trying to compete with other people, I think that we would live in a much better world. But that, of course, doesn't just apply to magic. That applies to everything. And people are people, and, you know, sometimes they're a little selfish.
Now, there is Western magic and there's Eastern mysticism. Is there a difference there?
There is. So when we're talking about Eastern mysticism, we're talking primarily about the various Hindu dharmas, Buddhism, Taoism, Confucianism. And the Eastern paths, I don't want to overgeneralize because this is always dangerous, but in many cases, the Eastern paths are very much about meditation and mysticism, mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, if you visualize the image of, you know, the content Buddha sitting in a cave just meditating, you know, the Eastern paths are very much like that. They're very much about just being okay with reality as it is. And for instance, in Buddhism, is very much about letting go of desire and relinquishing desire. And many of the Eastern paths are about just understanding how the nature of the world has changed and just kind of letting go and being okay with it. The difference between the Eastern paths and the Western paths is that Western esotericism or Western occultism is very much about changing the world and changing the material world.
For the better. For the better.
Well, yes, yeah. Of course. And John Dee is, but, you know, but the problem is that, you know, it's quite hard to change the world in a purely positive way.
Hold on, Jason. We're at the bottom of the hour, but we're going to be right back. We are back with Jason Louvre. His book is called John Dee and the Empire of Angels, and we were talking about Western magic compared to Eastern mysticism. Is one better than the other, Jason?
You know, I think they work great together. And practically speaking, I think that somebody who really gets into this stuff, it's a great idea to combine a Western magical practice which would be doing ritual and focusing on manifesting the things that you want in your life, like a career that works for you, a relationship that works for you, a life path that works for you, but combining that with Eastern meditation so that you have the insight to understand that the material world isn't the be-all, end-all, and you don't just get caught up in a materialism trap. I think they just work perfectly together. So I think these distinctions are actually kind of falling away as we become a more global and globalized culture. So, of course, I've explored both of them deeply, and I teach both of them at magic.me, but I think that they're two parts of a much bigger thing.
Why is magic so important to people, in your opinion?
In which people specifically? People who are just getting into it now?
Yeah, people who've been practicing it or have been in it for a long time.
I think that it's important to people because it gives them a sense of being in control of their life, which it does. And also, you know, magic provides so many benefits. It allows people to, you know, I always tell people, you know, when you get really good at things like hardcore going, you know, meditation and yogic breathing and entering into magical trance states, I mean, let's face it, you can get really high legally for free forever, which is quite useful on a planet that contains so much suffering and wear and tear
yes.
on the physical body. That's only one of many benefits, but I think that, you know, when people get seriously into magical practice, what really happens is they enter into like a current of personal evolution where the universe wakes up and becomes alive, and they realize that they're not just alone in the universe. They're not just an isolated kind of atom of consciousness on this planet. They're actually deeply connected to the entire universe and everyone else and all of nature and all of history. And they realize that human life is, and human consciousness is constantly in the process of evolving and moving forward and becoming more awake and more alive and more aware and more compassionate. And that when people very quickly realize that when they work with that current, which is really just the forward push of reality, the forward push of nature, you know, they're swimming with the tide instead of against it, their lives just completely open up and become, you know, for lack of a better word, magical. So what could be better, in my opinion?
Let me get this quick breaking story in first here, Jason. We'll get right back to you. A magnitude 5.5 quake strikes near southern Iran. What's the significance? It was near a nuclear power plant. And that's all we know at this point. Boy, that could be deadly. Who knows what could happen there? Jeez, what a mess. So if people want to start learning and investigating magic on their own, of course, they could go to your website, magic.me. What do you recommend? How do they start?
Well, I've actually got a super easy answer to that question. So I have a free 7-day email course on magic.
Free? Free?
It's free, F-E-R-E, everyone's favorite word. And it's full of videos, video trainings and podcasts and articles. And, you know, we'll teach you how to meditate and guided visualizations. And we'll teach you how to do magic. And all you have to do to get that, by the way, is text the word. You can get it through your phone. You just text the word shaman, so S-H-A-M-A-N, to the phone number 44222. That's it. And so the word shaman to the phone number 44222, and it'll just ask you for your email address, and if you enter it, it will send you the free course. And it's all laid out for everyone there. But really, the broader answer to the question is, you know, building a daily meditation practice is the first step. Beginning to get very clear on what you really want in life. Very, very clear, and doing a lot of thinking and journaling and meditating about that so that you come to an answer that you know is what you truly want for your life and not what somebody else has overlaid on you and told you you should be, no matter who that is. And that's really, and then, of course, once you get those two things down, meditation and getting clear on what you want your life to be, then it becomes a question of learning practical occult techniques to start manifesting those things. And those techniques are designed to, by the way, work with the unconscious mind instead of the conscious mind. I mean, when we look at things like self-help, you know, people often ask me, well, how is this any different from self-help? Well, here's how it's different. Self-help is very much about using the conscious mind and doing, you know, affirmations and telling yourself every day and in every little way, I'm getting better. Well, magic is quite different because it works with the unconscious mind. And in that sense, it's quite much more powerful because the unconscious mind is much more powerful and also much stranger than the conscious mind. The conscious mind is only like the tiny tip of the iceberg, if you will, in the vast glacier of human consciousness. You know, we only have such a tiny access to a tiny part of our brain if we just look at the conscious mind. And also the conscious mind is often quite self-defeating. You know, anyone who's ever kind of tripped over themselves trying to make something happen in their life or second-guessed, you know, their own ability or been unconfident about something knows this. But the difference with magic is that you're working with the raw unconscious forces, and those, you know, as Carl Jung said, you know, you will be buffeted around by what you appears to be the winds of fate, and you will call it, you know, you will call it fate or you know, random occurrence until you realize that it's actually your unconscious manifesting, and you learn to harness your unconscious mind, and that's what it's about.
How would you use magic if you were using it for your day-to-day activities?
Well, I can tell you my approach to it, which is that, you know, I strive to cultivate a meditation practice every day. And I've tried Hindu forms and Buddhist forms are very, very good. And I strive to, you know, meditate at 1 to 3 hours a day and to see through the veils of, you know, my own mind's nonsense. You know, magic is about pulling back the veil from the world, but it's also about pulling back the veil from our own internal dialogue and our own illusions that we create for ourselves. So I think that, you know, long periods of meditation are how I approach it, but I also use it on a day-to-day basis just to get clear about what my goals are and then using magical rituals to help manifest them. And it really becomes a way of focusing your life on one thing at a time, instead of getting distracted and pulled around by 10,000 different things, which is unfortunately the state that most people are in. They never get anything done in their lives because they're pulled around by so many distractions. And now, of course, with cell phones, it's so much worse, and social media. And so this, I think, is one of the most crucial skills that people can learn, which is developing the strength of mind through meditation and then externalized meditation, which is magical ritual, to focus all of their activities in their entire life on manifesting what they truly want for their life and almost, if you will, turning their entire life into a magical process or a magical ritual in that sense.
You talk about angelic conversations. Explain that.
Okay, well, here's where we get into the really, you know,
the fun
really
stuff.
Fun stuff. All right, let's do this. Let's get into this. Now, so John Dee was the scientific advisor to Elizabeth, and he was fascinated with the occult and spent 50 years researching it. But he was a hardhead, as they say. He was a very technical and rational and mathematical-minded person. So he wasn't very intuitive. He wasn't in touch with the spiritual world. He wasn't, you know, he didn't have an artist or psychics type consciousness.
Right.
So it wasn't until he hooked up with this guy named Edward Kelly, who was half his age, 25, an alcoholic.
He was a medium, though, wasn't he?
He was a medium, exactly, and he was a great medium. He could actually do it. Now, his life was a mess. I mean, this guy had had his ears cut off for forging coins. They had alleged that he'd spent all this time summoning demons and, you know, practicing necromancy and all this stuff. So he brought a long shadow with him, and he was from the wrong side of the tracks. But he was, a great medium. And these two men formed a working partnership to start talking to angels. And they did this by Dee doing magical rituals and then Edward Kelly scrying, which is essentially staring into a crystal ball until you start to trance out and go into an altered state of consciousness. It's very much like a psychedelic experience, let's say, but without chemicals. And he, over the course of, you know, about 7 years, started to transmit communications from angels, starting with, you know, the Archangel Gabriel and Michael, but just proceeding to these profound and bizarre, you know, psychedelic apparitions of angels where they report talking to, you know, giants with suns for heads, with pillars of brass for legs. And, you know, at one point they see angels that are just like full of wings upon wings and angels with multiple pupils in each eye. And at one point they even see God. And now most people think of God as, you know, an old man with a white beard. When they saw God, what they saw was a gigantic whale covered with eyes from head to toe, from which the mouth of which emitted this tremendous, colossal howling, and that they went into its mouth and saw all of the layers of reality being peeled back, the 30 aethers as they entered into the mouth of the whale. That's pretty intense, right?
It sure is. It sure
so,
is.
But over the course of these sessions, they were, and this was painstaking work, by the way, because the angels were transmitting to them, you know, they spent the first 3 or 4 years just transmitting to them kind of this set of schematics that almost looks like electrical diagrams for building what they called the Holy Table of Practice, which is kind of like the world's most complicated Ouija board,
yeah,
which was this, you know, very complex 3-foot by 3-foot cube table with a crystal ball on top and many occult diagrams as part of it that they were to use to make more reliable contact with the angels. But the angels also gave them the Enochian language, or the angelic language, which they said was the language spoken by humanity before the fall of Eden, and before the fall from Eden, and that is also spoken by angels. And that if they use this language, which, you know, seems in many ways quite has a lot of interlinguistic consistency as an actual language. Linguists have, like the linguist Donald Laycock, examined it in the 70s and was quite impressed by it. A real academic linguist. And but they gave them this language that they said, you know, if they used it to essentially do magical incantations, could warp reality and warp the nature of existence and be used to contact angels. And they didn't stop there. They proceeded to then, after they delivered all this stuff, they then told Ian Kelly, and by the way, this is what I really brought out in my book that hasn't been talked about so much with this subject too much for some reason, maybe just because it's so weird. But they told Ian Kelly, now we've given you this stuff, but the reason we've given it to you is because we want you to use it to create a new world order.
Hmm.
What they meant by that was they said they wanted there to be one totalizing super religion for the entire planet that would unify not only Protestantism and Catholicism, but also Islam and Judaism and even paganism.
That didn't happen.
It didn't happen, although we did get global capitalism, which kind of fulfills the same function in a way. But they said that that everyone in the world would be underneath the domination of the angels, and it would be one hermetic occult super religion for the entire planet, and that they would piggyback this on top of Dee's earlier plans to create the British Empire, and this basically the entire world would be ruled by Elizabeth the First as the hermetic super sovereign of the entire planet, controlling the entire world terrestrially through the British Empire and spiritually through this new angelic religion. And the reason they wanted to do this is because they wanted to redeem all of humanity in preparation for the second coming. And they were quite upset that humanity was and is in such a fallen state.
Jason, these angels and these conversations with the angelic realm, in your opinion, what are angels? A lot of people think they're ETs. What do you think?
This is a great and tremendously broad question. So here's the thing. When people think about angels, they often think about kind of Hallmark card, rosy-cheeked
yes.
cherubs.
Wings and all that stuff.
Exactly. And they're always very, like, cuddly. You know, from some of the descriptions that I've given of angels already, the things that Dee and Kelly met were like, I don't know, like Clive Barker paintings or just bizarre, you know, Hieronymus Bosch, just bizarre things. But I think that certainly at least how Dee and Kelly and also people in the Renaissance generally saw angels is they saw them as the next level of evolution, right? They saw that, you know, there was God and then there were people. And in between God and humans, there were angels who were like an intermediary step, who were more evolved spiritually than humans, and they were pure spiritually, but they didn't have bodies.
But the real deal.
Right. But also the thing, because they don't have bodies, the way that people, and this is often, people often become to, they think that magic is literal, like you do a magical ritual and something literally appears in front of you.
Right.
But when we're talking about beings that don't have bodies or things like angels, what we're really talking about is beings that are encountered in dreams or that are encountered in deep states of meditation, mm-hmm. or scrying, as I mentioned. And I think that people in the Renaissance, you know, truly believed that there were angels, you know, invisible angels in charge of everything in the universe.
Hold on right there, Jason. We'll talk more about angels. We'll also take phone calls next up on Coast to Coast AM.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.